Hello everyone, it's Helena here in Truro, here to talk about more great works of art, and this time by the king of chiaroscuro, Caravaggio, one of the most influential and innovative artists of all time. So acclaimed, he's become abbreviated. Art historians talk about art BC and AC, art before and after Caravaggio. And there's no doubt to my mind, his work marked a watershed in the history of art. Now we can list the most distinctive features of his work. His skillful use of chiaroscuro, that dramatic contrast between light and shade, which gave intense realism and drama to his paintings and underpinned the spiritual meanings of his religious works. His depiction of the most dramatic or pivotal event in a story he's relating, using techniques such as picture cropping, spotlighting the main protagonists, and eliminating any unnecessary detail, so we just focus on the protagonists and their reaction to what is taking place. The use of ordinary people as models in his paintings, the street people, as Martin Scorsese refers to them, he's a great fan of Caravaggio, depicting them not as they might wish to be seen, but as they really are. His inclusion of himself in many of his paintings, either as the main subject or as a participant, bystander or recorder of events. He's the man running away at the martyrdom of St. Matthew, the one shining a light on the betrayal of Christ by Judas. And it's his face staring out at us in the decapitated head of Goliath. So when Rembrandt gate crashes the crucifixion of Christ, we know where he's got the idea from. His championing of still life painting, taking everyday objects and making them subjects in their own right, and a focus for reflection on the transience of earthly things and of human life itself, and his refusal to tone down the violence in his dramatic scenes. We get the full blood, guts and gore of a crucifixion, a stabbing, a garrotting or a beheading. He was the Quentin Tarantino or Martin Scorsese of his day. Indeed, Martin Scorsese said it was seeing the martyrdom of St. Peter, where Caravaggio demonstrates the physical exertion required to kill a man, that inspired his handling of the murder scenes in his famous movie, The Goodfellas. But listing these distinctive features doesn't really explain how Caravaggio's work stands out from the crowd. And I think connection is the key. Few artists communicate so forcefully with their viewer as Caravaggio does. Few break down the boundary between the picture plane and the viewer's space as successfully as he. When I look at a work by Caravaggio, I feel as though the artist's hands are coming out of the canvas towards me, grabbing me by the shoulders, pulling me into the painting and forcing me to participate, to engage with the characters and empathise with the emotions they're experiencing. So their anger, their fear, their acute pain and agony, their regret, their guilt, their sorrow, their doubt. Occasionally, their joy and contentment. I'm left feeling emotionally drained. Caravaggio gives a whole new definition to the word seeing. It's a seeing that penetrates through the eyes to the heart, mind and soul and leaves an indelible impression on your memory. You may not like Caravaggio's work, but it's hard not to be moved by it. And that's the key to his genius. Now, with his cinematic and theatrical effects, Caravaggio very much resonates with the modern age. And yet an art that speaks so poignantly of the human condition is an art that transcends modern technology. He's an artist for our time, but an artist for all time. Truly the most modern of the old masters. Now, Caravaggio's life was as controversial and dramatic as his art. And my intention over a series of three podcasts is to give a commentary on a painting from each of the three distinct phases of his career and weave in between this commentary a narrative of his life. Now, even the briefest of narratives about Caravaggio presents its challenges because our knowledge of his life is somewhat patchy. We rely heavily upon the early biographers, whose commentaries are somewhat inconsistent and reflect the prejudices they felt towards the artist and his work. We have a wealth of documentary evidence regarding Caravaggio's time in Rome, and these are largely legal documents relating to the many court cases in which he was involved. He had a criminal record longer than both arms. But the problem with these records is they can give an exaggerated impression of Caravaggio's violent temperament. It's important that they are set in their historical and social context. Yes, Caravaggio was a very violent man, there's no doubt about that. But he lived in a violent city in a violent age, and it was not uncommon for men to settle matters of dispute, particularly where honour was concerned, by violent means. And these documents don't give us an insight into his personality or character. We have no extant letters by Caravaggio. We have no detailed accounts of discussions he may have had with family, friends or fellow artists about his views on art or religion or life in general. Oh, how I wish I could have one of those fancy dinner parties where you can invite guests from all periods of history. Caravaggio would be top of my list, and I'd make sure that artichokes were off the menu, for reasons I'll explain in a later episode. There are so many questions I would love to ask him. But given that the dinner party isn't possible, how can we flesh out the bones and bring to life this colourful and controversial character? Well, for a start, we have to take the facts as we know them, and where there are gaps, make reasonable assumptions based on our knowledge of the historical, social, economic, and religious circumstances of the time. And then, of course, there are the paintings. As I've already said, few artists spoke so clearly and directly through their art as Caravaggio did. But of course, any art commentary is bound to be subjective. You may disagree with what I say. Challenge it. And that's great if you do, because that's the great beauty about art. Making a personal connection with an artist and their work. And my greatest desire in making these podcasts is that I may whet your appetite to go back to Caravaggio's work if you're familiar with it, maybe seek out paintings you haven't seen before or haven't seen for a while, or if you're new to his work, discover it for the first time. And I promise you, you'll find it a very rich and rewarding experience. I'll be recording part one in two sections. And you may want to look up the paintings beforehand in preparation for this. In section two, my main commentary will be on Boy Bitten by a Lizard, which is in the National Gallery in London. So if you look up the National Gallery website, you can find the painting under Caravaggio, and it gives an image of the painting, as well as a brief outline about it and a more detailed commentary. In section one, I'll also be referring to various sculptures that may have influenced Caravaggio in his early years when he was training as an artist in Milan before he went to Rome. One of these is by Guido Mazzone. It's called The Lamentation, and it can be found in the Church of St. Anne de Lombardy in the city of Naples. Another is The Penitent Mary Magdalene by Donatello, which is in the Museo dell'Opera del Duomo in Florence. And then finally, a pilgrimage site, which is also a World Heritage Site and is known as the Sacromonte or Sacred Mountain. And this is outside the town of Varallo in Italy. And it consists of over 40 chapels with painted statues inside each chapel, representing stories from the Bible, from Adam and Eve through to the crucifixion. And so if you look under Varallo, it lists tourist attractions, and you'll be able to find the Sacred Mountain together with images of the chapels and some of the sculptural groups within those chapels. So that's just if you want to do some preparation for the talks. But I hope very much to enjoy your company for part one of the podcast of the Life and Art of Caravaggio. Bye-bye.